Newstalk ZB and the New Zealand Herald present Cooking the Books with Frances Cook, demystifying your finances.
Hi, I'm Frances Cook and welcome to the show. Many of us aren't prepared for retirement, but the deck is particularly stacked against women. Spend a moment thinking about it and it becomes obvious why. Women earn less than men, on average 12% less. So if you're saving a percentage of your income, you're already off to a bad start with less in the kitty. Then there's the common reality of having a family. Right or wrong, it's usually women who take time out from the workforce in order to raise the kids. When you stop earning or shift onto part-time work, your retirement savings will obviously take a major hit. Earlier this year, ANZ released information showing the average woman would retire with almost $80,000 less in their KiwiSaver accounts than a man. When you look at the percentages, the average woman's account balance is 19% lower. Maybe you plan to split the nest egg with your partner, the one you had the family with, which is totally fair and reasonable, except for the problem that divorce happens. It's not nice, but it's a reality, and it's an expensive one. Even if you manage the miraculous fair split of assets, which many don't, a lot of money will still be eaten up by lawyers' fees. It's not a hopeless situation, though. Just one that women need to deal with. So, let's deal with it.
Newstalk ZB presents Cooking the Books with Frances Cook, boosting your business confidence.
I'm joined now by Amanda Morrell, author of the personal finance book Money Matters, and also spokesperson for Simplicity, a non-profit KiwiSaver scheme. So, why is it that women need to save more for retirement?
Well, sadly, Frances, there's a lot of crushing statistics against women, particularly as we get older. For starters, we tend to outlive men, so you can plan on living a little bit longer than your male counterpart. Statistically as well, you know, there's a good chance most marriages, half of all marriages, I think maybe it's a little bit better than that, end in divorce. So as you grow older, there is a good likelihood that you will end up single, either being widowed or divorced. And further to that, you know, motherhood is a choice for most people, but a lot of us do become mothers, and taking time out of the workforce or reducing your hours during those precious years also considerably puts women at a disadvantage when it comes to saving for their retirement. So those are the three biggies, and there's a few others that we can discuss along the way as well.
Yes, all sorts of factors that go into it, of course. So let's start with the pay gap. So women have been paid about 12% less than men for the last decade. And side note, don't anyone message me about how it's women's choices, because the latest government research did rule out education, occupation and industry, or part-time work as being the major causes. And they actually put down 80% of that gap to differences in how men and women were treated by employers and unconscious bias. So now that we're all on the same page that the pay gap is real, how does that accumulate over time to reflect in women's retirement savings?
Well, the statistics on, you know, they are variable, but if you look at non-KiwiSaver savings, for example, the statistics there, and this refers to New Zealand data, is that men have about 40% more savings in their private savings accounts than women do. So it does have a cumulative effect, seriously, because, you know, compound interest works in your favor. The younger you are, you start earlier. If you leave it till later on, it's not like you're going to be able to make that time up. You can still stock away as much money as you like, but you're never going to get that gain than you would have when you were in your younger years. So 12% might seem small, but over a lifetime of working, it really does add up. And I would say on the 12% figure, you know, that's on average. But if you have some candid conversations with women and men out there, you'll find that it's a lot bigger than 12%.
Yes, and of course it does also vary a little bit. Māori and Pacific women, the pay gap is a lot bigger for them as well.
Massive, and I think there's a handy little statistic about female journalists getting paid a 26 or 25% less than their male counterparts as well, which you might want to review with your boss next time you go in for salary negotiations.
Yes, it's the old cobbler's shoes, isn't it? Compound interest you mentioned there, and that is, of course, a huge thing where you make a gain one year and then that's in your pot and that adds to the entire pot even if you do nothing else the rest of the time, and that increases your gains. It snowballs. So important. So it does also, though, compound these differences, doesn't it? Compounds the pay gap.
Yeah, so just a little example. You might not think, so we're talking about 12% pay difference, okay, that's significant. You might not think 1% is a big difference. But here's an example. If you're making a salary of $40,000 a year and you're in your 20s and you're currently only paying 3% of your pay, your gross pay, into your KiwiSaver as opposed to 4, the difference... if you can take a guess, but I'll give you the number anyhow. It's by the time you reach 65, that 1% difference adds up to $35,000. Again, wow. That might not seem like a big difference, but when you're older and say you've got grandkids living in Australia or you need a new car, that 35K is, you know, it's going to be significant for some people.
And now you mentioned when women take time off to have a baby. I mean, the fairness of that is a debate for another time. But for most people, it will be the woman who takes time out of her career, who puts that on hold while she's raising the children. So how else does that sort of add to the snowball effect of problems for retirement?
Oh, it seriously adds to that situation. I mean, it depends on how long you take, time away from your job. Say it's 10 years. Say you were a lawyer and you took, I don't know what your salary would have been, leaving if you were a junior lawyer in your early 20s, or 30s. But, that's some big numbers adding up over a decade or longer. Then you've got to think about the reintroduction into the workforce, coming back in when you're less confident about having left for that period of time, and also convincing an employer that you should be paid what, your male colleagues who are not running around trying to juggle motherhood and childcare, etc., should be paid as well. So that's a biggie as well for a lot of women. Again, it depends on their personal circumstances. As if you're going and starting a family together, you kind of look at your family situation probably as a union, and maybe consider smoothing out the differences there. But again, skipping ahead to those unlikely or actually not so unlikely, but probable scenarios about being single, living longer, etc., it's a very precarious situation for a lot of women. They don't want to think about it. But, I had a conversation just last week with a woman in her 50s going through a separation. She said, "Man, if you ever write a second book, please write a book for young women about how they need to sort this stuff out in their mind earlier on in their 20s. And not to curse what's going to happen in the future, but to be realistic, to be practical, and to prepare for themselves to be living financially independently potentially one day, and don't be naive about it." And, she was quite serious because, having to lose all your wealth or half your wealth and amid the emotional struggles of, things that are going to go on in middle life is not pretty.
And I do think that people do tend to get a bit depressed about this, and to avoid looking at what seems like a big problem, just stick your head in the sand. And that doesn't make the problem go away. That just stops you dealing with it. While, every day that you deal with it earlier is another day it's easier to deal with. So, okay, let's focus on what can people, particularly women, do about this?
Absolutely. So there's some very practical things you can do, because you're very right. Everybody just, they want to deny getting older, and they stick their head in the sand, and then they wait until later on and say, I got a problem on my hands. So a couple things that they could do right off the bat. Personal debt. My own policy is there's no such thing as good debt. I'd get the heck out of debt as quickly as human possible. Pay off the credit cards if you've got student debt. I know it's 0% interest or low interest until you get a job, but nail that one on the head. And don't get back into trouble. So that's one of them. And a frightening statistic for you. There's $15.5 billion worth of personal debt in New Zealand, and that excludes mortgages.
Whoa, that's a lot.
That's a lot of debt. If every single person in New Zealand, including children, were to be carrying that debt, they'd owe about $3,500 each. But people don't talk readily about money. Everything looks very nice on the surface, new handbags and holidays and nice cars and stuff, but you peel back the layers, there's some real ugly debt situations going on. The other thing I would say that's quite easy for yourself to do, especially if you're in KiwiSaver or you have some other saving mechanisms, is pay yourself first. So don't blow through. I mean, I hear this all all the time, I don't know how to get ahead. Like, I'm so stuck. I'm so far behind. But if you put that, direct that money into savings before you have a chance to spend it, you're saving yourself literally from yourself. So, and KiwiSaver is a brilliant device for that. So, you know, it goes right off your pay pack. You don't see it. Your employer pays into it. And of course you get those voluntary contributions. And I'll mention that before I forget, because there was a significant thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, in fact, who did not take advantage of getting $521 for free from KiwiSaver by not, by virtue of not paying the sort of the minimum mandatory amount to get that money. And again, that's money sitting on the table. If you saw it on the sidewalk today, would you step over it? I don't think so. So that's a little thing, but that again adds up year after year. So make sure you claim that. On the contributions, I mentioned earlier on the significant difference over a lifetime is saving the difference between 1%. So you could easily, on your KiwiSaver, is jack up your contribution to a slightly higher rate. Don't know if that's going to bridge the gap between your potential ex-partner and you in the 40% range later on, but higher contribution rate is going to help improve your savings outcomes significantly. And in fact, the Commissioner for Financial Literacy has recommended that we start upping our savings rates. They're, compared to other OECD countries, quite low. You'll know that in Australia, they're paying 9, it's moving up to 12. And if you read a lot of research, the sort of the recommended minimum is about 10% of your gross savings that you should be saving. So start saving and just direct it into account that you cannot touch, so you don't get into trouble spending that later on a holiday or whatever it is that you think you need now. So delayed gratification. And then spending, that's another big one. And I know, you know, it's expensive being a woman. Haircuts are double what the men will pay. And, you know, nails. Oh, if you're really into that beauty thing, that's a whole other liability in and of itself. But you know, you don't really need a lot of stuff to be happy, to do your job, etc. And I believe that all comes down to mindfulness, making mindful daily decisions about how you spend your money, whether it's that extra latte or clothing or some little temporary consumer fix that makes you feel high and happy for a little bit, and then you kind of instantly regret it. So those are, you know, there's some other things you can do if you're really serious about money. Those are some easy things you can nail on the head right away to get yourself a little bit further ahead down the track.
Yeah, and I've got to say, the idea of paying yourself first and making your savings before you do anything else, that made such a huge difference for me when I started getting it together on money. And I would, I split my savings accounts into three, and I had, you know, KiwiSaver and all that. But then I also had my own savings, my savings for if I wanted a big splurge. So that took away any excuses for going into my regular savings. And I also had money that I wanted to put extra onto the mortgage. And I felt so much more in control than any happiness I could have gotten from frittering that money away.
Absolutely. And that's what people find. I mean, it takes a little bit of effort, short-term pain initially, to, you know, get into your bank account, to do the analysis, the budgeting, set up those automated processes. But once you do, and they tick away quietly without very little effort on your part after the fact, you'll make these huge strides later on the road. And the thing that I'm hearing now from a lot of people, you know, with KiwiSaver 10 years down the track, and they're actually opening their balances and looking, and they're like, wow, I've got $40,000 in my account. Yeah, that's significant, and it's going to be a significant chunk down on a first-time home, or one day, or in your retirement savings bucket. So absolutely, those little tinkerings you can do, and with so much technology out there, there's really no excuse not to get onto it.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Amanda Morrell, personal finance author and Simplicity spokesperson. If you have any questions about this podcast or an idea for next time, do come and have a chat to me. I'm on Twitter at Frances Cook and Facebook at Frances Cook Journalist. You can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Until next time, have a great day.
And that's Frances cooking up your business confidence for another week on News Talk ZB.